Welcome to Julie Arts, everything arts related in and around Austin. And today I'm having a conversation with Natasha Drina. She's a vocalist who's going to be performing this Saturday night with our Austin Symphony Orchestra in a tribute to Judy Garland. Natasha will be recreating some magic moments from a concert Judy Garland gave on April 23rd, 1961 at Carnegie Hall that is often referred to as the greatest night in show business history. Natasha, how are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing good, although Mercury is retrograde, and I don't know how you're handling it, but the struggle is real. Am I right?
I literally flew out of Savannah, and now a hurricane is coming there after I had just told a high school friend who moved. I was like, we never get hurricanes. He's been there 2 weeks. I'm like, sorry, not there to help you.
That is it. That's totally it. That's the thing.
I know. It is.
Well done, Natasha, because you are safely in Austin, which is good because Mercury retrograde can wreak havoc with travel plans. And we've got the show coming up on Saturday with the Austin Symphony Orchestra, a tribute to Judy Garland. But before we get into that, I want to know all about you, Natasha. Where, please tell us, did you grow up? And what were you thinking was going to be your job when you were a grown-up?
Oh, okay. Well, I grew up in the San Francisco Bay Area in a town just outside of San Francisco called Pleasanton, California. And I know, I think I always thought I was going to be a singer. My parents put me in piano lessons when I was, well, this isn't true. My sister started taking piano lessons at 9 and quit after her first lesson. And I was 4 and a half. And I just picked up her books and walked down the street to her piano teacher's house and started taking the piano lessons. Like, my feet didn't even hit the floor. But then I was kind of bored with piano and I just kind of wanted to sing the songs. And my piano teacher realized I could just kind of repeat back melodies or anything she played that I already could do a little bit of sight singing at a young age. And so, she helped me find a voice teacher and I auditioned for my voice teacher by singing the song Over the Rainbow.
Oh my gosh. So Judy was a part of your life from very early on.
Well, yeah. So around 8, I actually hadn't seen The Wizard of Oz or I didn't know really anything about Judy Garland. But my voice teacher, whose name was Marie Cochran, who's still in the same in Pleasanton. And we talked yesterday, actually. And she sent my mom and I off to buy the Judy Garland songbook because she had just made the assumption that I was a huge fan and taught me all the like younger year songs like Zing with the Strings of My Heart or the Trolley Song, The Boy Next Door, which is for Meet Me in St. Louis. And also like Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas. Some of the great, great, great songs of her youth. That was how it all started.
Wow. Oh my God. And did you waver along the way? Like, you know, did you have support from your family? Did you feel like it was a struggle at times or that you really ought to be thinking about a career that some people would call more sensible?
I have one parent that thinks I should do something more sensible, and I have one parent that thinks that I should follow my dreams. And
that must have been interesting at dinner.
Still it. So I did a lot of theater and I did a lot of singing and competitions and I didn't have a typical stage parent type families, but if I said, oh, I want to go do this singing competition in San Jose, then they would happily take me, or I want to take these ballet classes on Saturday morning, they would happily take me and fit it into the budget and do the things that you need to do as parents. I'm a parent myself now, so I know what that looks like. And they were very supportive in that way. But they were not musicians themselves, and they don't really come from a long line of musicians. And I worked in my mother's law office over the summers to make some money. And some of the attorneys there thought that I would make a very good lawyer. And I often say that it's so interesting. We're told to be kind of humble and not braggadocious as artists. If you're a good singer or a good piano player or violinist, you're encouraged to kind of keep that to yourself. But if you're good at being a lawyer, or you're good as, I don't know, a mathematician or something, you're allowed to say like, I'm very good at this. It's more black and white. Mm-hmm. I guess it's subjective. It's more of a gray area, right? And so it took a little bit of like a journey of self-discovery just to be able to say like, I think I'm good at this. And I and I think I can make a career happen out of this. And so after one very depressing year at home studying normal things, the parent that thinks I should be an artist kind of kicked me in the bottom and sent me off to New York.
Wow. Oh, wow. What
they
a moment.
They were like, go on your way, child. You seem depressed.
Wow. Yeah, because if you're sort of denying that part of yourself that makes you feel most alive, you're not serving yourself or anybody else, are you?
Yeah. And their point was more like, you could be good at this other thing, but this is the thing that makes you happy. And I really see it. And you should go and do that.
You know, and there is this interesting, I think, line, like, between acting and being a lawyer or litigator in particular, like professions are on both sides of that line. And so I think people who are good at each of those things, it's like, yeah, okay, I could choose to do this and I could be good at it, but what is the thing that I'm meant for?
Exactly. And it's interesting now that I have children of my own and seeing what I think that they would be good at. And it's interesting that you do start to repeat some cycles, right? Wanting them to do certain things or kind of nudging them towards something. And then I always have to kind of remind myself of the other parent that's like, what do you want to do?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, I will say my 14-year-old is in the choir department at the performing arts school where we live. So she's definitely got a little bit of the singing side of her.
Nice. Nice. Oh, that's exciting. Well, and now you can do that in relationship very differently because, like, you have such a background to offer her.
I know. It is. It's fun. It's fun to watch her learn all the things and kind of relive some memories.
So if you were talking to, let's say, a teenage vocalist that you didn't know, and she was studying music and she wanted to be on stage as her career, is there any kind of blanket advice you would want to share? Or maybe the better way to ask this question is, if you were talking to your younger self, what are some of those lessons you wish you had already learned that might have made it easier for you as you were progressing in your career?
I wish that I had learned to trust my instincts and to trust my gut earlier. I knew how I wanted to sing and I knew how I wanted to, very similar to probably because I had followed Judy Garland for so long. There's like some back phrasing happening there. There's some, you know, she sings swing. And so I knew what I wanted to do to songs in my own way, but classical teachers and in school, they very much want to train you into a model that they believe books jobs. And it took until a friend, a mentor, said to me at one point, like, you should expect that people would want to pay to hear you. And that was the first time someone had really given me the confidence to know that I was worth what they thought I'd be worth as a lawyer, if we're going to circle back to the previous question.
Yeah.
You know? And so, yeah, I just think I spent a lot of years trying to fit into this mold of what, like, the Broadway girl would look like. And I really wanted to be singing, like, in the 1950s with a big band. Like, that's what I wanted to do.
Nice.
Right? I wanted to be Rosemary Clooney and her sister in The White Christmas.
Oh, God, yes. Oh, yeah. I embraced
that wholeheartedly. Like, at a dinner club where people were wearing nice outfits.
Oh, yeah. The best things happen while you're dancing. I mean, come on.
The best things happen while you're dancing. Yes. Good one. Good one.
Oh, my God. I'm all over that.
Yeah.
And so, I don't know, were you told you need to tamp it down, or you got to adjust this, or you need to try to be more
that? Yeah, kind of like you have to say exactly what's on the page, or, you know, observe that quarter rest, or, you know, there's not a crescendo there, or, you know, just like, they would be so in conservatories a lot of times, you know, very much so, even like, this is what you wear to an audition. You'd be better off if your hair looked like this. They have a very,
oh, wow. That's a lot of structure.
It's a lot of structure. And, you know, I don't know that it's that great for a creative type.
Yeah, I could see like that would create more self-doubt, wouldn't it?
Well, of course. And then you're thinking, okay, now I'm just in a line with like 20 other girls that look exactly like me. How am I possibly going to get the job over them.
Yeah.
You know, and I remember at one time singing After You've Gone, which is one of the songs in the show this weekend, at an audition for a guy who was one of my teachers in college, but I was auditioning for a regional production of something I can't even remember. And I sang it and he was like, "Why is this not your job? You should just be singing these songs all the time. Like, I could sit and watch you do this all day long. So you're more than welcome to like be in the chorus of my show, but like I would rather produce and like write a show for just you doing this that you do."
Oh, wow. That must have been a real light bulb moment.
It was a real light bulb moment. I'll tell you a funny story. He was the person that in college had told me that I probably wouldn't get work if I didn't extend my eyebrows out a little further.
Oh, stop. So, really?
Hilarious that, you know, 12 years later, he's, regardless of how I draw on my eyebrows, he was like, "I'm ready to produce a full show of your fabulousness." I was like, "That's because I got away from you guys and your conservatory stuff."
Oh, man. So how did you start bringing more of yourself into your art? I'm imagining it was a really gradual thing.
It was a pretty gradual thing. So the first show I ever did about Judy Garland was called Beyond the Rainbow. And it was actually a recreation of the Carnegie Hall concert in which there was like four or five other actors, and they kind of did these scenes, these flashback scenes of Judy Garland's life. And I just stood like on the center stage in a thing, we called it the postage stamp of Carnegie Hall, and sang the songs. And then they would kind of do a historical kind of type of reenactment, I guess.
If you would. Cool.
Yeah, it was cool. It was very cool. So I learned that I could sing like Judy Garland while I was in college from a piano coach there that knew her work very well. And I was doing some shows in the middle of America. And I ran into somebody from college and he introduced me to his friend. And he said, "This is Natasha Drina. If you close your eyes, she can sound exactly like Judy Garland." And I was like, "Well, that's not on my resume anymore."
Oh.
So I put it on my resume. I put it back on my resume. I never knew what to call it, like, because I'm not really like an impersonator. I put it on my resume and I went to another audition. And the gentleman, the director, was not paying attention to me at all. I was singing Night and Day for an audition for something else. And he's just talking to the person at the table the whole time. And I'm like, "This guy is so rude." And then when I finished singing, he said, "Have you ever heard of this show, Beyond the Rainbow?" And I said, "No." And he told me what it was. He says, "I see on your resume that you sing like Judy Garland." I said, "Yes." He goes, "Well, I've seen your work all over town, and I've been wanting to work with you. So it's happening in Atlanta, and I'm just going to tell them that you're my top choice." And so they auditioned all these women in Atlanta, and then I flew down, and we went like head to head for the role.
And this is the guy who seemed like he wasn't paying attention to your audition.
Yeah, no, I guess he was just excited that he found someone that could sing like Judy Garland. He was reading my resume, and I thought he was like, I don't know. Just
that is
rude.
So wild. Okay, so then you go head to head. Yeah, that's wild. And you go head to head in Atlanta, and you get the part, right?
Yes, of course. Yeah. So I sang one song, and then the artistic director said, "Well, do you have anything else?" And I said, "Well, I assume you want to hear Over the Rainbow." And so I did Over the Rainbow, and he was like, he just walked me out on stage, and he's like, "Can you fill this whole house?" But I sure can. So yeah, I think, you know, sometimes on your path that opportunities present themselves so that you know you're ready to take it to the next level.
Yes. Yes, but maybe you also have to be like awake to them too, right? Because you could miss it.
Oh, sure. Sure, sure. You could absolutely miss it. You could absolutely miss it. And it was like 24 songs per show that I was singing. And sometimes we had two shows per day. So when he was asking, like, "Can you do this?" I mean, that was sometimes with encore 50 songs.
Wow. Wow. That sounds intense. Like, what kind of personal care rituals or vocal hygiene do you subscribe to?
Oh, my goodness. Well, I don't know if you've ever listened to the Carnegie Hall recording of Judy Garland, where she says, like, "I picked up a fungi in Atlanta, Georgia, and I literally, like, I wore a mask before people were wearing masks. The pollen there is so bad, and it was during the spring, and I would like go straight to the car and drive to the residence that they were having me stay. I did nothing. I lived life like a nun. I read a lot of books.
Wow.
Books about Judy, books about other things. There were no streaming services at that time in life, and so there were not smartphones.
And you're walking around with a mask as if you're immunocompromised to protect your voice,
I did.
Right?
I had childhood asthma, so I had to wear a mask as a kid. Very annoying during allergy season. And so it wasn't like a big deal for me to just like throw on a mask to prevent the pollen. But your car would be like yellow. Mm. Like I would go out to my car and it would be covered in yellow pollen dust. And a lot of tea. I still vocalize daily, whether I'm going to sing or not, do some types of like warm. I mean, I think most musicians, I know not all singers do, but I think most professional musicians at least do through some scales or 30 minutes or so of playing each day.
And what kind of tea is your favorite tea?
Oh, my favorite tea is the passion tea from Starbucks with a lot of honey in it.
Oh,
purple one.
Oh yeah. Okay.
I love that. Cause I think that, I get kind of tired. I'll have chamomile or peppermint or the other ones, but if I had my choice, that's the one I would pick.
Yeah. And then do you do vocal rest periodically? Are you a believer in that?
I am a believer in that. And I do, I had a time. So then I've done another play about Judy Garland three times called End of the Rainbow. And in that one, I speak like her also, which does not come naturally to my voice type.
Mm.
Just the singing is very easy for me to lock into and doesn't do much like wear or tear on my vocal cords. But unbeknownst to me, I had flown from New York to Atlanta to play the witch in Into the Woods. And I had bronchitis and sinusitis in both nostrils.
Oh.
Straight into rehearsals, and I just really like did a number on my vocal cords, and that's when I kind of learned to take a little bit of a break or to warm down. I don't know if you're a singer, but that's something I tell kids all the time. It's like the process of warming down your vocal cords after your after a big show or after really any show. It includes a lot of what they call straw work, and I tell people all the time. That's something else I tell my students. Like, I wish I had known this much earlier. It's just as important to like, when your vocal cords are inflamed like that, to, you know, get them back to their normal size.
That's interesting because that never, ever occurred to me. And, you know, you warm down a body after a workout in a way, you know, like.
Yeah, exactly.
So why wouldn't you do it to your vocal cords? I've never heard anyone talk about that before.
Yeah, it's a big trend, I guess I would say, on Broadway now, like the personal steamers and the warming down, especially when you're doing something like 9 shows a week, that you really, you know, if you're going to make it through the entire week, that you need to be, you know, you can't just go out and be talking. And so it's very weird. If you pass me on the highway, I look like I'm blowing through a straw. Like,
oh, seriously?
On my drive home. Yeah.
And that's a way to like warm down the voice, the vocal cords?
Yeah, like you were like you had a straw between your lips and like you were trying to blow air through the straw. That helps your vocal cords get, you know, back to normal.
And you're not actually making any sound, or you are also?
You're not making sound, but you are blowing air through.
Oh, wow. That's interesting. I'm going to try that just for the sensation of it.
Yeah. Well, and we mentioned COVID. I mean, I've had a friend who lost her voice completely with COVID. And that's one of the things that her, the therapist, her speech therapist has given her to do to try to get her voice strengthened again, like after laryngitis.
Oh, wow. Very interesting. And especially someone like you who have been singing for, you know, I mean, what is it? 20 years? Is that right?
Oh, no, it's like 40 years now. You're very nice. I started when I was 8, and I was just saying to someone this morning, this is the time period that, so Judy Garland would have been 100 years old.
Yes.
But she passed away on June 22nd in 1969.
Yeah.
So she was 47 and a month. 47 and 2 weeks. And so this is the year that I hit 47 and was like, oh gosh, it's, by the time I get to the Austin Symphony, I'm going to be older than she ever was.
Oh, that's wild.
It's so weird because I'm like, I have an 8-year-old and a 10-year-old, and I think about her kids. They were little. Joe was little, and she had so much life left.
Oh, she did.
When you're little, you know, 47 seems kind of old.
Well, sure, because, you know, like when you're little, that's the oldest you've ever been. So you can't.
Right. You think, I know. Now I think, oh my gosh, what would.
Exactly. I love that you're talking about like how young she was, like how much life she had left to live. And I think, feel like that's sort of one of the things that Renee Zellweger playing Judy helped bring to life for people, was that how that she had young kids and that she, you know, she was just cut short, you know?
She was, yeah.
And so it's remarkable that we have you to kind of help us hold dear all that she meant to us. And I want to talk about this special night on Saturday, because you're really recreating an iconic night from 1961, right?
Almost. I don't do all the songs in the exact same order. I do her opening pair. Well, from the overture, and then the first two songs are exactly the same. But these arrangements were licensed to us from the Judy Garland Heirs Trust. And so that means that Liza and Lorna and Joe have like taken them out of the vault and allowed them to be checked over. A woman named Joan Ellison goes and, you know, she's making sure that they're all up to how they sounded on the recording. And yes, they've licensed them to us, to you. So I'm not doing the exact order, because I do kind of tell a little bit of a story of how I grew up falling in love with her and her voice and her career and the things that I've learned from her along the way. And so I've changed the order around to make the story flow better.
Sure. Okay.
Yeah. Very similar. I've added the Judy Garland Barbra Streisand duet into the show, which was actually done on the Judy Garland Show, but it was one of the ones they allowed you to rent. And I just think, you know, who doesn't need a little forget your troubles, come on, get happy, and happy days are here again. And a dear friend of mine, who also was from Atlanta, we had done Les Mis together. She moved here during the pandemic, and her voice is as crystal clear as Barbra Streisand's. So her name's Leslie Walden Belair. She'll be joining me. And so, different, but a lot alike.
Oh my God, that's so great. And how much trust you must feel for her children to be like, yeah, here they are. We're taking them out of the vault, and there you go. And just honored to be able to do that.
I know. I'm so excited. I can't wait to hear the Austin Symphony Orchestra play these arrangements. You know, I've done it with smaller versions. I have sung with other symphonies, you know, a few songs here and there, but never just like a full evening of celebrating Judy. So
yeah, I think it's going to be a very sexy night. This this Carnegie Hall concert that she gave back in 1961, I think it was in the month of April.
Yes, it's April 23rd. Yes.
April 23rd. It's been called the greatest night in show business history. I mean, that, I know, right?
It won 4 Grammys. The album won 4 Grammys. And I double checked it, because it was actually 73 weeks on the Billboard charts, but like 10 to 13 weeks at number one. And then I recently learned that after the Renee Zellweger movie, it went back up to the top of the charts again for something like 20 weeks.
Wow.
People really rediscovered. It's so interesting. If you look at pictures, and I don't know if you've ever been to Carnegie Hall.
Yes.
But people are literally crowding the stage like a mosh pit. I mean, like, they're not in their seats. And if you listen to the recording, you can hear the, like, when she's getting towards the end and she's saying like, I don't have any songs left. We have 2 more songs. Do you want to hear Chicago or After You've Gone? And the crowd goes wild for After You've Gone. And then you hear a voice from the back say, sing them both, do them all. And she's been there so long, and she started late that night, which was not out of character, but she started late. And so the people had been there waiting for like 2 hours. And so she sings, and she sings all these songs. And then they get to the encore or to After You've Gone, and then Chicago. And then obviously at the end is Over the Rainbow. And you can just hear, she is so tired, but she has just given them like every song the orchestra like had, you know, on their music stands. And you can hear them shuffling their papers around because they don't know she's going to do it either.
Wow. She left it all out on the stage, and they did too.
Yeah.
Keeping up with her.
Yeah. And that was kind of Mort Lindsey, who was a lifelong piano player and arranger of hers. That was very much his idea to get her career going again. She was a little down on her luck at the time. And he said, what if, and she, every time she had done a concert prior, she brought like the costumes and the vaudeville look and dressed like a clown and did it very much as an act. And this was the first time she just comes out in like a simple black dress in the first set, and she changes into her black cigarette pants in the second set. And she just is just her. And she's just this tiny 5-foot woman that captivates, has an audience in the palm of her hand, I would say.
Oh, God. Magical. You know, and I've never heard that audio, but I'm going to rectify that for sure.
Oh, yes. It's crazy. But people are talking. I mean, one time she takes a break and she says, I need to get a sip of water. And you hear a lady from the back just scream, I love you. She's like, I love you too.
And how wonderful that they released it like actually as it was. They didn't clean it up or anything.
I know. And also how wonderful that who at Capitol Records thought, hey, let's record this just in case. What a smart person.
Yeah. I mean, that was a genius move, actually, considering
how
much
it sold. It wasn't easy to record at those times.
Oh, that's true. That's true. I don't even think about that. That's right.
Yeah. I mean, it was like, I don't know, direct to vinyl. I don't know. I don't even know how they did it back then.
Yeah. Wow.
I know.
So we're so proud of our Austin Symphony Orchestra. We just, we're so lucky to have them, and we're just so proud of everything that they do. And so I can understand that this tribute to Judy Garland on Saturday night is going to be extra special. You sound so much like Judy Garland. Like, it's kind of crazy. There's a little clip, I don't know if you've seen it, that's up on the Austin Symphony Orchestra website, where someone's playing a little bit of you singing, and in the background, somebody's going, oh my God, she really sounds like Judy.
What's funny is we tried to record that concert, and there was somebody, where life imitates art or whatever that saying is, that person, every recording, I'm singing The Man That Got Away, and then it'll be like in the middle of the song, and he'll go, oh my God, it's uncanny. Or I'm like, you literally talk during every song.
Oh, that's so funny.
It's a small snippet during every song that we recorded.
But I kind of love that, though. Like,
it's funny.
It's so authentic, you know?
It is. It's funny. It brings me joy. I mean, and that person I happen to know is also a piano player. And it sometimes, if you listen really hard, you can hear him complimenting my piano player. And so that's always nice to hear.
Oh, cool.
Too, that someone, you know, thinks highly of someone playing the instrument that they know how to play.
Yes. Well, I have so enjoyed our chat, Natasha.
Oh, me too. Me too. Are you coming on Saturday? No pressure. I know everyone has.
Oh, I love that. No pressure. No. The truth is I'm super bummed. I'll be out of town. I'm going to miss it.
Yeah, that's okay. But it's been a pleasure.
Get your tickets for this Saturday, October 1st, to see Natasha Drina performing live with your Austin Symphony Orchestra. Head over to austinsymphony.org and you can hear for yourself just how much she sounds like Judy Garland.
If you want to hear more from Juliet, listen to Magic 95.5 weekday afternoons. She's on the air from noon to 7, keeping you company while you're at work or on that all-too-lengthy drive home.